Right. Well, thank you to the organizers and for inviting me. So I wanted to talk about something else, and then Matt told me, I've already heard you say this. Say something new. So then I said, could I say this? And Matt said, oh, yeah, but that's not all that interesting, and you haven't really done anything, right? So, anyway, so I tried to be somewhere between these two poles, right? I mean, things that are boring to Matt because he's already heard them, and things that may not be boring to Matt, but I haven't done them yet, right? So I'll try to. Well, I've just acknowledged you verbally. Is this? This is it. Yeah. Okay. So anyway, this is based on past and ongoing work, which was with my PhD student Toby Atkins, who's right here, and about half of it has been published and in JPP. I just got 31 minutes, right? We have noticed this, people. We have the longest article ID numbers in the field. Nobody can match that. Right? This is excellence for you. I'm afraid there will be lots of equations which I don't necessarily expect you to parse, and I will try to give you some idea of what I'm doing. But don't get discouraged if I go too fast through too much of a analytical thicket. So I will start by doing something that one should never do when one writes papers, which is a forward reference. So on Wednesday, either Ammar Hakim or Jimmy Juno or both of them will show you these pictures, right?
Yes.
So and I won't tell you, you know, I won't steal their thunder. I will just say that they did some experiments with what I think Ammar would bill as a truly collisionless code, they started with a certain configuration, which, as most certain configurations in collisionless plasmas, is unstable. And they let it go, and they looked at what it relaxed to, and it relaxed to something, right? And something it relaxed to isn't what it was when they started, and it would be very difficult to tell where it came from, although where it came from may well matter. Now, what's this picture? This is velocity space, right? Vx, Vy. This is the same thing, except this is velocity space, and this is one of the spatial coordinates. And this is the distribution function, right? And I want to be motivated by that sort of plot. So what do we see here? We see two things. We see a general shape, right? The distribution function vaguely wants to occupy some part of phase space. We also see small-scale structure, right? So it's all very filamentous. So in other words, F is F naught plus delta F, right? The two questions I want to focus on are the following. First of all, do we need to know absolutely everything about the initial condition to tell what F naught is going to be? And is it a different F naught for every initial condition? Or is there a universal collisionless equilibrium, or indeed more likely classes of collisionless equilibria that are independent of precise nature of initial conditions, and that we could, in the same way that we look for Maxwellians when we deal with colliding particles in an ideal gas, are there equilibria that we could predict without asking the initial value problem, without asking the initial value question? Then there is delta F. There is finite structure in phase space. So this is phase space turbulence. Let's call it turbulence. And let's ask, what is the structure of this phase space turbulence, right? So now, you know, since we're saturated with dealing with fluid versions of turbulence, right? The way to go forward is to go from 3D to 6D. There's a lot more space to roam there. So how do we approach this problem? So first of all, this is completely basic, right? You know, there's a collisionless plasma. It's described by a Vlasov equation. Let me start with the question of F naught, right? So what possible universal equilibria are there? What you do is you average this over space. And what do you find? Well, you know, this is the average of this is dF naught by dt. There's your d by dv, and then you have an average of phi times f, where these are the spatially dependent things. So what I've done is I've taken, you know, I consider my equilibrium to be spatially independent, and my turbulence to depend on space, and then live in Fourier space, right? So obviously the world is a periodic box, and in X, not in V. So we'll deal with that. Right? So this is the slow equilibrium evolution. What goes into this evolution? Well, what goes into it is the electric perturbations, Poisson equation here, and the perturbations of F. This is delta F consists of these FKs, and they satisfy this equation, which is just this minus that. Right, so this consists of linear response and turbulence. Right, these are the nonlinearities, and this is the you know, this is what I think Greg House will tell you quite a lot about, you know, how to calculate things like this. So in the real world, if I now take this thing here and plug it in there, I will end up finding that my evolution of F naught depends on stuff which in the end depends on the correlation function between f of v prime and f of v, right? So actually, the two questions I have asked are intrinsically related, right? What the structure of phase space turbulence is, as expressed by this correlation function, is going to tell us about how the collisionless equilibria evolve. So, to make one further step, as I said, there is the delta F consists of linear response and of turbulence, and so I will write it as linear response. This is familiar from every textbook, plus everything else, and the everything else will be the initial condition, just ballistically evolved initial condition, plus whatever this nonlinear term does to it, right? So I've shoved all the unknowns into this function H. So this is linear response plus turbulence, ballistic linear response to initial conditions plus turbulence. So if you then do one more step and stick this into here and do a few manipulations, you end up with the following thing. This looks like a lot of stuff, but fundamentally the message here is that the F naught evolves according to some operator on the right hand side, which looks vaguely like a collision integral. Right, so this is there are d by dv. There's another d by dv. There's a d by dv of f of v. There is a d by dv double prime of f double prime. There is an integral of f double prime. So it's a standard structure which all the collision operators satisfy. And inside there is this kernel which is where we have now shoved all the unknowns. And the unknowns are basically the correlation function of this H, which is turbulence processed through a bunch of linear response things and so on. So this here is a dielectric tensor and so on, but you don't need to parse all these integrals. The point is that if I know how to calculate or at least model this correlation function, I can calculate this D, I can then stick it in here, and I have a collisionless collision integral that evolves F naught. Okay? So properties of phase space turbulence, which are in here, will decide to what equilibrium maybe will decide to what equilibrium F naught relaxes and how quickly. I said maybe because, of course, it's not guaranteed that a collision integral that you get this way will, for example, have an entropy and an H theorem and a propensity to relax to anything interesting. But that at least would be the strategy. Let's not fall into the astrophysics fallacy of saying that, you know, we do these fundamental things because they're applied to something else, large scale, like cosmology, right? That's, we all know it's rubbish. What's you know, the small scale things are interesting in themselves as well. And so phase space turbulence is also interesting on its own account, right? How is energy transferred across phase space? How is it thermalized? You know, are there universal phase space spectra, right? Turbulence, you know, what is the Kolmogorov theory of phase space turbulence, right? So these are interesting questions in themselves. Oh, and by the way, is there Landau damping in the turbulent plasma? Right, so let's ask that question as well. Is it true that a turbulent cascade is subject to some nonlinear interactions plus just linear dissipation at the Landau rate? Right, is that how it works? So let's focus on on phase space turbulence for a while. I will come back to F naught at the end of the talk. So right. So this is the equation we're trying to solve. It's got three things in it. It has phase mixing, which is this. It has the linear response, and it has nonlinear interactions between scales, which are turbulence. So this is mode coupling between wave numbers. So well, what you do is what you always do. You multiply this by the star of that, and you add the star of the whole thing, and you end up with an equation for the quantity of interest, which is the correlation function of delta F, right? And what it looks like on the left-hand side, it's linear. This is d by dt. This is the phase mixing terms. And on the right-hand side, you have a bunch of correlators, in particular third-order correlators, which you, of course, don't know how to calculate, because phi is itself a function of f, and you have to stick it in, and there's the usual closure problem, which you then resolve, which one can then resolve in a kind of a brutalist way. By my favorite brutalist way of doing it is to, at this stage, break the self-consistency of phi and f and say, let's imagine I know the correlator of the electric field. So I'm simply going to declare that the electric field, the two-time correlation function of electric field, is some function of k times a delta function of t minus t prime. This is, of course, wrong. But so view it as a kind of a Markovian closure, right? Which is, again, I repeat, it is wrong. But that's the effectively the only game in town. And when people tell you that it's not, don't believe them. although you can dress it up more respectably than this, but fundamentally, this. So what this does is that this takes into account effects of stochastic fields, but it makes trapping irrelevant, essentially, because at least on the stochastic level, because basically your electric fields, you assume that they're changing so fast that particles don't really have time to be trapped. In reality, all time scales are of the same order in these problems, like in all problems, and so this is, of course, not going to be the full story. So if I do this, then it turns out that you can break these correlators quite easily. Again, you don't need to parse why that is, but basically the third-order correlators become proportional to the second-order correlators, these functions, and this just becomes proportional to the first-order correlator when you do that. You put that back in, and you get a closed equation, right? And that closed equation is an equation for the correlation function, which has got phase mixing, a linear source, which is the result of mixing the background distribution function, quasi-linear diffusion, and the interesting bit, which will be dealt with in a moment. So let me, before dealing with interesting bits, let me first ask what happens if we, let's go back to linear theory and see what linear theory tells you about this. So linear theory means all the interesting bits disappear, and you've just got this, the source and the phase mixing. The solution of this equation is this, and if you take time to infinity, you're going to get a delta function of k dot v minus v prime. So this equation basically tells you that this function tends to develop, due to linear terms, tends to develop very small scales in the difference between the velocities. Okay, so and so on that base, motivated by that, let me consider this function not as a function of v and v prime, but as a function of the kind of center of mass velocity and the difference between v and v prime. Okay, and let me further assume that the derivatives with respect to the first are much smaller than the derivatives with respect to the second. Okay, kind of a WKB approximation in velocity space. If you do that, so watch it, right? So this is what it becomes. I now have this W here, and the derivatives are all with respect to W, and some terms have disappeared. And then I'll make a final step, which I suppose you expected I would make. Let's Fourier transform in this velocity difference, right? This is, Ilya Dodin would call it the Wigner function of the correlation function in velocity space. So you Fourier transform, and this S from now on is the dual variable to velocity difference, the wave number in velocity space, or frequency, if you like. So if you do that, you get that. So all your W's becomes derivatives, and all the derivatives with respect to W become S's. And so that's the new equation. And so before I study this equation, let me make the following point about it. This equation describes a journey through phase space, or dual phase space, of a conserved energy. If I take this function CKS and integrate it over everything that it depends on, I will find that that's actually just the integral over the phase space of delta F squared, and that's a kind of conserved energy for this problem. If you look at its budget, all these terms conserve it. The only place where it comes from is this source. And actually, you have to subtract collisional regularization at large S and K. Remember, since you're making small-scale structure in W, that means you're going to be pushing your energy towards large S, and potentially that is a problem if you haven't included some collisions. So collisions may have to come back to regularize this problem, but it might be okay for collisions to have a frequency that's equal to plus zero. So. Right. So how does this energy travel through phase space? Well, it has two basic routes to travel. So let me pretend that the phase space is one-dimensional. Well, one plus one-dimensional. This is K and this is S. So velocity space, real space. You inject energy or you start somewhere over here. Well, the mode coupling right here will push energies to larger k's. This term here, k dot s, will push energies towards large s, right? And when it gets to large enough s, collisions will regularize it, right? So this is what's usually called phase mixing, which is a synonym for Landau damping, because Landau damping in this formalism is the damping of the s equals to zero component of the energy, just the integral, and this is what we usually call turbulence, right? The mode coupling in real space. So right. So let's look at various terms here, right? So the phase mixing term, well, it's not just phase mixing, right? So it'll do phase mixing if K and S are pointing in the same direction. So this will K, this is just a propagation term that will take energy to higher velocity space wave numbers. And the velocity of that happening is proportional to k, right? But of course, in principle, it also allows anti-phase mixing or phase unmixing, as Bill prefers to call it. So if k and s are in two different directions, in opposite directions, then this will push energy from large s to small s. But of course, the source is at small s. Okay, so linearly, this is not a problem because linearly there is nothing at small scales in velocity space, and so there's nothing to push down from there. This here is a mode coupling term, and at this point comes the interesting observation that because different k's are coupled, if you take a phase mixing perturbation, a perturbation with k dot s larger than zero, and couple it to something that reverses its sign, what you can do is you can take a perturbation that's moving up to large S and turn it around and let it anti-phase mix back to low S. This is actually just the stochastic version of what's known as the plasma echo effect, right? You know, linearly, you couple a wave with K to a wave with minus 2K, and it gets you a wave with minus K, and it phase mixes, and then it reverses direction, and anti-phase mixes comes back. It's one of these beautiful pieces of plasma theory, which were done in the 60s and then quickly confirmed experimentally by people at UCSD, Malmberg and Gould and so on. So in a series of what now are textbook classical papers. So that's the story. So the question, therefore, it's a meaningful question. Is there Landau damping in the turbulent plasma? Right? I will phase mix out, but what will this term do? Will it turn everything around and push it back? And thus stop everything from Landau damping, right? There's certainly turbulence. We know there is turbulence, right? But is there Landau damping? Okay. Since I've started talking in one plus one dimensions, let me make that approximation officially, not approximation, simplification. So I took this equation and turned all the vectors into scalars. Everything is now in one direction. This is what this equation looks like. So one spatial dimension. And I'll make another brutalist approximation. I will assume and justify later that actually I can assume that inside this mode coupling sum, these electric perturbations, kappa p, are at smaller wave numbers than c of k. So I'm going to expand in p here, smaller than k. I'll do this expansion, and this turns into a diffusion term. So this happens. Okay, and this is my new equation. This is looking simpler and simpler, as you see. Furthermore, let's look at a steady state, a statistical steady state. And so what do we now have? Now we have an equation that actually looks more superficially like a time-like evolution of C. If K is positive, then this wave number in velocity space is a bit like time, right? It's d by ds, right? And here it's fueled by a source term, which is actually an initial condition at s equals to 0, right? And actually, if you just keep those two, the solution is this, right? It's sk divided by k times a Heaviside function of S, and so it's basically just a flat spectrum in S, you know, something that depends on, that inherits its dependence on K from the source and is entirely independent on S. This is the same as, for those of you who are aficionados of Hermite space, this is exactly the same as M to the minus 1/2 Hermite spectrum that you get for Landau damping in Hermite space. The correspondence to Hermites is that S is square root of M, where M is the Hermite order at large M. Well, but of course the interesting thing is the mode coupling, which has now been turned into diffusion, well, or indeed anti-diffusion, depending on whether the sign in front of here is plus or minus. So what this can do is it, you know, you can diffuse to as S goes up, you can diffuse out, or you can diffuse back in, depending on the sign of this. So, and anti-diffusion is precisely the way that echo effect is captured in here. Okay, so let's, before I show you the formal solution, the reason for this equation is that it can be exactly solved. But before I show you the solution, let me show you a schematic of it. Right? So this is S, this is K. Along S equals to 0, we have the source, which is sort of like an initial condition. Phase mixing term here pushes energy up, right? So it takes this initial condition and forwards it up in S. Until the point where this term becomes, or rather where this term becomes comparable to this term. And if you just balance them, you will see that happens when S is proportional to K. So phase mixing goes. There's always a symmetric thing going on the other side. So then diffusion takes over, and what does diffusion do? It smears things out in K. So it'll transfer energy horizontally like this. But actually, it doesn't care about K equals to zero. It can go right through K equals to zero. So it can transfer it further out into this dead zone here, right? This zone was inaccessible to linear theory because there were no sources at large S. So the energy has now diffused out. It goes again to this line where this phase mixing term becomes important. But this is now a phase unmixing term. And so the energy turns around and goes back. Right? And it goes back and it refuels here. So this is so the cycle of energy evolution in phase space, 7 minutes according to my talk, is there and back again, right? You exit the fluid scales, and then you come back again. Right. Mathematically, you can deal with this because actually the Green's function for this equation can be derived, and then what you do is you take your S, your initial condition, you stick it into the Green's function, you find the solution over here, you find what it is here, then you have a different Green's function on this side, you stick the flux that you find here into this Green's function, forward it to here, find what the solution here is, and then it turns out, and that has to be equal again to your S, and it turns out that there is this completely uniquely determines the spectrum of this. So, and the solution is this. There's actually an analytical solution to this equation, which right this way possibly looks uninspiring. This is a picture of it. So this is K, this is S, this is phase mixing, this is diffusion, this is phase unmixing. So that's what it looks like. But the interesting things about it are what it does along here and along there, right? The asymptotics. So along here, it has an asymptotic of s to the minus 2. That's the velocity space spectrum. And along there, it has an asymptotic of k to the minus 2, which is Actually, I mean, the way you solve this problem is that this becomes a self-consistent problem for the source, because the source depends on the spectrum of electric field, which itself depends on delta F, and you can require everything to be self-consistent and require this to be equal to that, and that gives you a spectrum of electric fluctuations, which translates to a very steep spectrum for potential k to the minus 6. And this is a kind of a universal phase space spectrum which you can derive, which now depends on virtually nothing, except the myriad of assumptions that I have made. So, right, is Landau damping thus suppressed? One might ask, right? You know, what this says is that the energy recirculates and nothing goes anywhere. Not quite. We have to ask, what is the role of collisions in all of this, right? Because after all, the energy has to be thermalized somehow, fluctuation energy in the end. Collisions haven't been entirely abolished. The way to model collisions is to stick a term like this on the right-hand side, because remember, S is the wave number in velocity space, and collision operators are second-order operators in velocity space, right? So there is a regularization here with a collision frequency. And if you work out what that does, you will see that at some point, at large enough, so you simply consider this, balance this term with this term with this term and so on, and you look at where they take over, it turns out that at large enough k, the phase mixing energy, the energy that is being phase mixed up to large s, will encounter collisions before it encounters nonlinearity. And so this is uncompensated phase mixing, and everything here will be thermalized. The place where this happens scales as 1 over square root of the collision frequency. It's kind of a Kolmogorov scale for such turbulence. So Landau damping is suppressed, but only for wave numbers that scale as inverse power of collisionality. So for every wave number, if collisionality is equal to plus 0. So there is a kind of an analog of inertial range here. Now, the velocity space spectrum is 1 over s squared, as I said. That is much steeper than the spectrum for Landau damping. Remember, I told you that if linear terms only would produce a constant spectrum in S, right? So there's much less energy at large S. From here, I can simply read off what the typical velocity space scale is. It's along this line, right? So delta V, the typical size of velocity of variation of the distribution function with velocity, is scales as 1 over k, and it's entirely independent of collisionality in this range. Right. What can we learn from this? So I've told you about the kind of universal things about turbulence, right? So maybe this is interesting for its own sake, but let's go back to what I started with, the evolution of F naught. Remember that what the structure of the phase space turbulence is influences what the universal collisionless equilibrium is. So what can we learn from this about collisionless relaxation to universal equilibrium? Remember this was the formula, right? This was the collisionless collision integral, and the correlation function was sitting deep inside a number of integrals which had to chew over it. You can do a couple of other steps, which I don't necessarily expect you to parse. So basically, you can rewrite this in terms of a two-time correlation function of H. Then you can solve the equation for the two-time correlation function, which I haven't told you. It gives you more factors, but after a few other integrals, inside here, you finally have this C that sits inside this operator. So if you know C, you can stick it in and then do that integral, which of course is a simple task, and that will tell you what the collision operator is. Now, we haven't done this. It's actually a lot harder to do than it sounds, or maybe just as hard as it sounds. But remember, in quasi-linear theory, when all the nonlinearities are gone, all this stuff that goes in here turns out to be proportional to just a bunch of delta functions in velocity space. So basically, remember I mentioned that in the linear approximation, your C function simply becomes a delta function in velocity space. So, but that delta function comes multiplied necessarily when you have a shape and you replace it with a delta function, you have to multiply it by the width of that delta function. And that width is the typical correlation scale in velocity space, raised to the power of d, which is the number of dimensions. So this gives you, if you process all that, you can do that. That gives you an effective collisionless collision integral whose effective collision frequency is proportional to that. But that is constantly shrinking with time in a collisionless plasma, right? If you have a quasi-linear situation, you're simply phase mixing more and more and more and more. The only limit to this is collisionality, and collisionality, remember, is equal to plus 0, right? So basically, you get this, you know, your theory potentially collapses because you now have a collisionless collision integral whose collision frequency is going to zero as time goes on, and so you lose your theory. So, and if there are universal equilibria to which you can converge in this way, you probably have to start with a very violent situation. So you converge sufficiently fast before your distribution function before your correlation function shrunk all the way down to the collision scale. So what we now have, because of this, is we now have a delta V that's entirely independent of collisionality. So that potentially means that there is a collisionless collision frequency that's independent of the Coulomb collision frequency, and that at a finite rate you can converge to an equilibrium. So collisionless collisions may be able to cause turbulent plasma to relax to some universal equilibrium on a time scale that's independent of Coulomb collisionality. So does this mean that turbulent plasma is effectively collisionless? Is effectively collisional? Is this the end of collisionless plasmas? It might be. Most likely is collisional in this way, but in a different way than the standard Coulomb collisions, right? And so the work to do is to work out the new collision integral and find its solutions. So this is my summary slide, right? So I've made two relatively simple points. One is that you can derive, there are universal spectra that you can find for phase space. Landau damping is suppressed in a certain inertial range. You can get predictions for scalings. There might be a theory out there that will produce universal collisionless distributions. So watch this space. The upper part of this slide has been published in JPP, there. Beautiful style, isn't it? I don't mean of writing. I mean of typesetting. writing too. The second part is papers in preparation. So that's all I wanted to say. Thanks. Okay.
Before going to the funeral of Landau damping, uh-huh. I would ask myself how justified is this drop in PDT? Sure, because if I take a simple analogy to Fokker-Planck equation, mm-hmm. you cannot do this. You have some sort of secular slow evolution of your basic mode, whatever it is.
Uh-huh.
It depends on how you project, what functional space you project your mm-hmm. your equation.
So, in the case of the equation whose solution I showed you. I guess my answer could just be, well, I have produced a solution that there is a steady state solution. I found it, right? So, and you saw it. And that's a steady state solution. Can I prove to you that that's the only solution and so on? Well, we have many colleagues in mathematics departments whose bread and butter is to do these kinds of things. However, it's true that you can imagine situations where these things would have some kind of secular evolution, we have trouble converging to a steady state. I think the answer to that is that I suspect generically you actually do have to retain collisions at infinitesimally small collisionality, like in standard turbulence problems, right? So we shouldn't really be solving the kinetic version of Euler equation. We should be solving the kinetic version of Navier-Stokes equation. And so I suspect there will be steady states, unless, of course, there are inverse cascades in the problem, like in turbulence, where 2D turbulence you might fail to get a steady state simply because you have an accumulation of modes somewhere. I don't know if inverse cascades in phase space exist, but if they do, it would be a fascinating thing to discover.
Thank you.
Alec. So I'm not sure where this was on Matt's scale, but I thought it was interesting. So you had horizontal arrows and vertical arrows
yep.
for wave-particle and wave-wave interactions.
Mm-hmm.
But there are things like nonlinear Landau damping that are kind of a mixture of both, where the interaction between waves mediates absorption of energy by particles. And I guess what I'd like to know is if that's easily accommodated in your theory and whether that addresses some of these fine-scale problems.
I think it depends on what you mean by nonlinear Landau damping. If you mean trapping effects, Do you mean trapping effects?
No, I don't mean trapping effects. I mean this process that's been investigated in connection with cosmic ray propagation, mm-hmm. where alphane waves, the envelope created by a packet of mm-hmm. alphane waves, can resonate with a thermal ion and absorb energy.
So I don't know the answer to your question, but on formalistic grounds, I could say that's all inside the nonlinear term, right? So what have we made any approximations that rule anything like that out? I would say the potential primary culprit would be the breaking of time correlations between the electric fields, right? The assumption that the electric field is essentially stochastic in time and does not have time to probe the particles and develop a relationship with them and so on might suggest that these things may be gone. So one may have to go to finite correlation time models. It's very hard to do. Sometimes there are models where you can do that, but it's hard to do.
Alex, very interesting talk. I have two questions. One is that you did include collisions and you focused on what it does to Landau damping. But the other effect of collisions is also to have plasma echoes damp. The Sue Oberman theory tells you mm-hmm. that damps as quickly as minus nu 2 cubed.
Mm-hmm.
But work that Skiff and I and others have done shows that the Sue Oberman prediction may be too fast, probably goes more like minus nu t, because the Van Kampen spectrum gets completely displaced by the presence of mm-hmm. collisions. The question that I have is that new will feed back on your echo term as well in a way that you didn't discuss. That's one. Maybe you should answer that. My second question will come after that.
Unless I misunderstand the nature of the question, I think I did sort of discuss it. So it's this here. So what you see, how does echo work in this system? Your phase mix out, you nonlinearly diffuse along, and then you antiphase mix back down, right? So in order, so echo is this cycle, right? So the point here is that if you push your energy up, and if it encounters collisions, before it encounters nonlinearity, roughly speaking, that's where you will start getting irreversible dynamics, right? You'll start damping your energy by collisions, and it can no longer be recovered. Now, the precise details of this process are another question. It's actually quite hard to solve this equation with this term explicitly.
I have even a problem with the form of that term.
Sorry?
I have even a problem with the form of that term.
This term?
Yes, because it's too crude. If you look at something like Balescu-Lenard collision operator, even with a constant nu, what it does to the underlying spectrum is much more subtle than what you've done there by putting in a Navier-Stokes type of viscosity. I'm questioning both the nature of the collisions,
right,
the way you're modeling it, and the conclusions that you're coming at.
So if you true, however. What's a diffusion operator? A collision operator is a Fokker-Planck operator, right? It's a second-order operator in velocities. If I assume that the variation with velocities is very large, so this term is only this term fundamentally only matters at very small nu. This term only matters when you have very fast variation in velocity space. Presumably, it's a good approximation to retain just the second derivatives in that operator, right? And if I retain just the second derivatives and assume that everything else is quasi-constant, I will necessarily end up with a constant times d2 by dv squared, right? I don't know what else you can get this way out of a collision operator. This actually happens to be, I mean, if you want a particular collision operator for which this works, if you use the Leonard-Bernstein collision operator in 1D, and if you do this all in Hermite space, this, because Hermite polynomials are eigenfunctions of Leonard-Bernstein, that would be exactly the term you would get out of collisions.
I have one follow-up uh-huh. question, and I've taken mm-hmm. too much time already.
Yeah.
It'll be nice to put your work in the context of say, the Lindenbell entropy, which of course, as you know, was a pretty strong assumption, didn't do any of the fancy footwork, but was essentially an insight. And that's on the one hand. On the other hand, the resonance broadening theory, which essentially argued that you have clumps or holes in phase space. It would be nice if you put in perspective some of those nonlinear theories.
Let me answer this, right? So you can view this as a kind of a latter-day version of Dupree's theory, right? I mean, those of you who remember Dupree's paper, you can trace some of these things. So Dupree didn't appear to know about antiphase mixing. But, you know, quite a lot of this is present in Dupree. I think both Dupree and Lindenbell, well, Lindenbell is a statistical mechanical calculation, but there is a calculation like this, which recovers Lindenbell, which is due to Kadamtsev and Pogutse in the 70s, where you can actually derive a collision integral of the form that I have shown you, which gives you a Fermi-Dirac distribution for your answer. Right? This is done, so all of that stuff happens under this assumption that I mentioned rather casually. So at the end of the day, all of this, including Dupree actually, relies on saying that the correlation function is going to be something like a delta function in velocity space. And then you have to face the question of what is sitting in front of it, right? So in the Kadamtsev-Pogutse theory, what's sitting in front of it is the sort of a correlation volume in phase space, and they have a longer paper which they followed up with this, where they argue that that actually doesn't shrink as fast as you might have thought it did. And so it made sense to have these kinds of approximations. Fundamentally, Lindenbell, this assumption here, right, or rather this substitution here, corresponds to the Lindenbell assumption of phase space being filled with little pieces of phase density that are all uncorrelated with each other and are traveling around as particles. This said, I really like the Lindenbell calculation, and I would like to find some space for it here, especially since Amar and Jimmy are telling me that their distribution functions develop flat tops in just the right limits when they look just like just the right limits for the kind of a degenerate version of the Lindenbell distribution. It'd be very interesting to find that. However, I think this would only work if you can somehow limit from below the correlation scale in phase space, and if you could limit it by something that's independent of Coulomb collisionality, thus preserving the phase volume conservation assumption. And I hope that this is a step there. Yeah.
So did you ever do a stability analysis of the steady state solution in the kind of model?
Of what, sorry?
Stability analysis of the model solution in the model, well, the steady state solution in the model.
For this problem here?
Yes.
No. It'll be all right.
Okay, I'm afraid we're out of time. We may have time. Roman, if you can test your computer well, you can ask a question. Sorry.
Just to make a quick point. I mean, one of the more heavy-handed assumptions you made there was collapsing your system to sort of one dimension in each of your coordinates, right? And, for electromagnetic turbulence, as you are almost certainly aware, right? You can have nonlinear phase mixing. Some people call it the entropy cascade, which is going to cascade things to small dimensions in more than one dimension of velocity space. And if you think about something like a random walk, in 1D, it's easy to get back to zero, which is like anti-phase mixing. Yeah. But once you have multiple dimensions in which you're going to smaller, you're taking kicks in multiple dimensions, it's a lot harder to get back to zero, to the origin. And so I think that, if you include that, you're going to get a much more rapid cascade to small scales. And this sort of this diffusion back to getting the anti-phase mixing channel will end up losing out. Can you comment?
Okay, so a few things in response to this. So first of all, the three-dimensional version of the equation that I showed you, I did derive it. We don't quite know, Toby and I, yet how to solve it. Those of you who like solving 3D elliptical differential equations, come along, I'll show you the equation, maybe you'll solve it for us. right? It's gotta have an analytical solution, because if it doesn't, what's the point of applying all this brutality, right? So there is in principle a 3D generalization of this. It doesn't actually look like it does anything particularly different from what I've described to you, but formally it's harder to solve. So the second point is that when you have a magnetized plasma, the linear phase mixing does happen in 1D in the inertial range, right? If you are, not just in the inertial range, in the gyrokinetic approximation, the linear phase mixing is in 1D. And in fact, as you may know, there is a theory that I published a few years ago about how that would work in the drift kinetic approximation, right? And it's very similar, although not exactly the same as what I have just described. So, and I think you'll hear from Romain something on that. And finally, on the what happens below the Larmor scale, we don't know, right? I think Romain might tell us something about it today. And so I will relinquish my mic to Romain, who will answer all